True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do with your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let True Green take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which gives you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Think about how hard it is to manage our fantasy baseball teams. You need all the time you can get to put in waiver wire claims, fab bids, send out trades, and set your lineups. You'll have that extra time when True Green is taking care of your lawn. You do you, let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
Oh, and first pitch, rushing! Deep left field! This is way back! Welcome on!
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Frank, Scott, and Chris.
Did Vinny Pasquantino get called up today? He sure did. Welcome in to Fantasy Baseball Today on Tuesday, June 28th. Frank Sample joined by Scott White and Chris Towers. I guess technically when you're listening to this, he was called up yesterday. But don't worry, we'll talk about it. Big prospect, promotion, an unlikely complete game shutout, more pitcher regression, and Team Name Tuesday, which I can assure you will get done about an hour and 2 minutes away from now. Right, Chris?
That's my prediction, yeah. Scott said it's going to be the shortest show of the season, and I said there's no way. Because anytime we have these shows where we're like, oh, there wasn't really much to talk about, it's like somehow ends up being like an hour and 7 minutes. So, yeah, my prediction is Team Name Tuesday starts an hour in.
Frank promised us a game today to fill in the gaps, but he did not come through.
Didn't.
So I'm shaming him by predicting the shortest show of the year.
I have this weird complex, I think, where when we have less games, I over-prepare because I always think that we're never going to fill the show, and then we always overfill the show. So it's just
a minute down, baby.
Yeah,
we're off to a good start.
We are making great time. Let's talk about Vinny Pasquantino, who got called up on Monday, also known as the, quote, Italian breakfast. That's his nickname. I've also seen Italian nightmare. The common denominator is that he's Italian, so you can take that away from Vinny Pasquantino. Apparently, the nickname, the breakfast one, comes from Billy Butler, who was known as the country breakfast. So
yep.
They're both first basemen. They have similar builds. Alas, this is how we get that nickname. Vinny Pasquantino did slow down a bit in June in the minor leagues, but overall, he was batting .280 overall with 18 home runs and a .948 OPS. I updated the first base ranks. I moved him ahead of Luke Voit, Nate Lowe, Alex Kirilloff. Might be way too aggressive. Scott, what do you think?
I mean, I don't know that I'd have those three in that same order, but that sounds about right. I had him just ahead of Alex Kirilloff on my top prospects to stash the last time they were both in that column. So, yeah, anywhere you were excited about picking up Kirilloff, you should be excited about picking up Pasquantino and then some. Vintendo 64, I like to call him, because last year, Vinny Pasquantino had 64 extra base hits, 64 walks, and 64 strikeouts, which is interesting, not just for the parallelism, but because that's not many strikeouts. That's a lot of walks for the number of plate appearances you get in the minors, and that's a lot of extra base hits. So this guy is a really good hitter, at least by the raw stats. This year, you know, one more walk than strikeout, so he's continued the feat at AAA. And for a while there, you know, toward the end of May, he was looking like an absolute monster. It's cooled off in June, as you pointed out, Frank. But I think in June he has 12 walks versus 6 strikeouts. So, you know, even though the numbers haven't been good, he's still done impressive hitterish things that would lead me to believe, you know, hopefully he's going to have a smooth transition here to the majors.
Of course. that's what we assumed for Andrew Vaughn and Spencer Torkelson, who I think would be the two most relevant comps. The difference between those three players would be, one, Pasquantino's numbers are just better, at least in terms of the plate discipline, certainly, but also, you know, I think the fact that he actually did it at double A and triple A, which Torkelson and Vaughn didn't really do. That's, of course, also because those guys are 2 and 3 years younger, respectively, at the times that they made their debuts than Pasquantino is, and didn't go to double A or triple A. They skipped those levels almost entirely. And so, you know, it's I'm trying to figure out whether the fact that Pasquantino, like, he's older than those guys. You know, he's 24, and he's a first base only, potentially, you know, future DH likely, which explains why he was never a top 100 prospect for real life prospect rankings, because the bar for those types of players is really, really high. But the fact that he is a little more proven at the high level of the minors than Andrew Vaughn and Spencer Torkelson does maybe make it so that he's less likely to have those early struggles that we've certainly seen from both Torkelson and Vaughn. Vaughn turning it around this season, Torkelson kind of showing signs lately, but not really. So I think the read there is probably like Pasquantino maybe has a higher floor and a lower ceiling than those guys, but the quality of contact metrics that we have for him are pretty good. His max exit velo, according to Baseball America, last season was 116.5 miles per hour, which is
more than enough. Yeah,
very good.
he's a fly ball heavy hitter, 40% fly ball rate basically every year, every stop in the minors, heavy pull rate guy, hits a lot of infield fly balls. You know, he actually kind of reminds me of coming up is Rhys Hoskins. When he got called up, you know, maybe not like the most raw power, but a swing that is geared towards getting the most out of it. Hoskins struck out a lot more and walked more for what it's worth, but, you know, could be a situation where maybe that pull heavy approach and maybe the fact that he hits a decent amount of infield pop-ups throughout his minor league career, although that's been better this season. Maybe he's not quite a standout in terms of batting average the way you might think based on the minor league numbers, but all in all, I do expect or at least hope for a pretty smooth transition for Pasquantino.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the least predictable part, as the examples you've given have shown, and others in recent years beyond just Vaughn and Torkelson, really high-end prospects have come up and struggled right away, and I don't think I'm equipped really to say who's gonna sink and who's gonna swim right away. I think, yeah, he kind of got overlooked in traditional prospect rank lists because of defensive limitations and because he hardly, he wasn't like a first round pick. And he spent just last year and this year in the minors. He was hardly there as a college player who got drafted in round 11, you know, so it's kind of like the college football rankings. If you don't start out at a high point, it's hard to break into that top. I'm sure in most, if there were any top 100 re-releases, he'd be in them now. So I think I don't want to put limits on Pasquantino's upside. Obviously he's not going to be a base stealer. But I think if he's good right away, he could be really, really good right away. And, you know, part of that's going to depend on playing time. He's a left-handed batter. He was out of the lineup against a left-handed pitcher his first day in the majors. Is that going to be a regular thing? I imagine if he hits well, it won't be, but it may start out that way. And then the Royals may play games with Pasquantino's playing time at first, and we'll see if he can play his way out of it. But I think I don't want to sell the upside short. It's really just a question of, you know, is he going to be ready to deliver right away?
The comp I came to when I wrote about this for the site for CBSSports.com today was like the good version of Yuli Gurriel. You know, maybe not like huge power, although I think probably more power than you usually get from Yuli Gurriel. But like, hopefully, I think in a best case scenario, probably a similar approach, similar outcomes, you know, a contact heavy approach that, you know, remember, Gurriel did have a season where he hit 29 homers. You know, we didn't think he was going to repeat that, and he hasn't, but, you know, I do think that's like good batting average, good power, maybe not elite power, but I think that's within the realm of possibility for him.
Vinny Pasquantino, 45% rostered over on CBS. So pretty widely available if you need a corner infield bat, if you need a utility, whatever it might be. Lots of intrigue, lots of upside there with him. Hopefully does get the opportunity to play against lefties. He's actually been pretty good against him so far in his career in the minors. Why was he called up? Well, Carlos Santana was traded to the Seattle Mariners for right-handed pitchers Wyatt Mills and William Fleming. And in the month of June, which we've referenced a few times, Carlos Santana has actually been very good. 357 batting average, 2 homers, 13 walks to 7 strikeouts, and hitting the ball very hard. Chris, do you have any interest in Carlos Santana, deeper leagues, corner infielder, the way he's playing right now?
No, I think he's probably going to play about as much as he did, at least for the foreseeable future with Ty France out, because that's really the thing that led to this, you know, if you go back far enough, is Ty France going on the IL with that flexor strain. And I think Santana can still be a solid player, but it's not like he didn't switch leagues. So it's not like he becomes available in only leagues. And I think that's probably, I'm not going to say that's the only place that he's relevant, because he can be a viable 15-team option, but I don't think he's a difference maker even in that format.
All right. While we're just talking about prospects quickly, someone on Twitter asked me about stashing Jared Kelenic, and it might not be a bad idea. So far in June, hitting 276, 5 homers, an 887 OPS, has the strikeout rate down to 21% in the month. And I read an article by Curtis Christensen from prospectinsider.com highlighting some mechanical adjustments to Kelenic's batting stance, a toe tap in 2 strike counts, and being more loose with his hands. 37% rostered is Jared Kelenic. Scott, what do you think about stashing him while he's been relatively hot here in June?
Yeah, I've thought about adding him to the 5 on the verge in the prospects report. I mean, he's technically not a prospect anymore, but neither was Kirilloff, and I was adding him because, I mean, what he was doing in AAA was so impressive. Wanted to shed some more light on it. Overall, as of last week, you mentioned the strikeout rate was down in June, but as of last week, when I considered it, it was over 30% still at AAA for his entire time there. And maybe that's corrected a good bit. But if you're looking for an extra outfielder to stash, I'd rather stash Kelenic at this point probably than Joe Adell, who's been hovering around the Mendoza line at AAA. Obviously, I'd much rather have Pasquantino than Kelenic. But that could have probably gone without saying.
All right, let's move into Monday's actual action here next.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
All right. Oh, my goodness gracious. Standouts from Monday. And we will start with Chris.
Let's talk about Juan Yepez, who got off to a really good start at the beginning of his major league career, then kind of hit a rough patch. But he's been quite solid for the last couple of weeks, culminating in a 2-homer game on Monday. I think he had 3 batted balls that were at least 95 miles per hour in this one. I actually think Juan Yepez is kind of a decent comp for Pasquantino. I think Pasquantino probably has better plate discipline, but their production in the minors was relatively similar at the high levels. And he's hitting .326 over his past 13 games, 2 home runs over 100 miles per hour. The quality of contact has been improving. And yeah, I think Juan Yepez, 32% rostered, is a decent consolation prize if Pasquantino is not available in your league.
Yep, he has started the last 8 games for the Cardinals with Tyler O'Neill back on the IL. And Scott, I know this is something you've referenced before where, you know, a prospect comes up, he hits well, you know, kind of falls back a little bit, and then bounces back once again, which is what Juan Yepez has done here. He's 32% rostered. Let's just say, who would you rather take a shot on right now, Yepez or Vinny Pasquantino?
Pasquantino, baby. Like I said, I'm not putting limits on the upside. I think Chris's comps that he's been giving are on the conservative side, which is, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. I don't mind dreaming with prospects, though, of what could be.
I mean, he could hit .282 with a 30 homer pace.
What is that?
What Juan Yepez is currently doing.
Yeah, he could. Do you think Juan Yepes is going to do that?
I don't think he's likely to continue to hit this well moving forward. You know, I think he's overperforming his expected stats a little bit. The quality of contact metrics aren't all backing up what he's doing, especially, you know, the max exit velo is there. He's 95th percentile there, 114.4 max exit velo. But he's been inconsistent with the quality of contact, I would say. And that's reflected in the fact that early on when he had, what, 3 home runs in his first 7 games or whatever it was, the quality of contact was pretty middling. He was getting a bunch of multi-hit games, but it was a lot of like 84 mile per hour line drives over the second baseman's head or whatever. But I think the minor league production, you know, I don't think Pasquantino has like a huge edge there. They're similar build, similar profiles, same age. So I think they're pretty similar players.
I want to say Pasquantino is quite a bit more disciplined than Yepes in the minors, unless I'm remembering.
Yes, that would be the main difference, yeah.
And that's probably the thing I care about most of all, which is maybe why I'm higher on Pasquantino than you are, is like, if you're walking 12% of the time and striking out 12% of the time, like Pasquantino is, like, I don't care what level you're at. That is impressive.
All right.
So Yepes did hit for more power, I would say.
Chris, would
he
you
did have a 972 OPS at AAA.
Chris, if you had to add one, who would you take, Yepes or Finny P?
I would go with Pasquantino. You know, I think Yepes is kind of the consolation prize if you miss on Pasquantino.
All right, fair enough. While we're talking about Yepes, Cardinal outfielder, Dylan Carlson, I wanted to mention, he went 2-for-4 with a double and triple. Low-key has been solid since the start of May, hitting .295, 4 homers, 12 doubles, 2 steals, a 16% strikeout rate, 10% walk rate. Not hitting the ball all that hard. He's 61% rostered.
He looks like a slap hitter. It's weird.
Yeah. There's not a lot of power, but, you know, in a points league, the doubles, the plate discipline, it seems pretty helpful. Scott, what do you think about Dylan Carlson?
I don't think much of Dylan Carlson, gotta be honest.
All right. Well, I tried, Dylan, if you're listening. Oh, my goodness gracious. For you, Scott, who do you have?
Okay. I'm going to go with Chad Kuhl, who did a cool thing on Monday. He was at Coors Field. He was facing the Dodgers. He threw a complete game shutout. Wow. Good for him. Yeah, I don't see much to get excited about here. He has a bad walk rate. He has a bad strikeout rate. He has a bad fly ball rate. He has, after the shutout, a 3.49 ERA, very solid. His xFIP is 4.58, and I will point out xFIP. One of the qualities of xFIP is that it normalizes for venue, and his venue happens to be the worst one for pitchers. So, if it was taking into account Coors Field, which xFIP doesn't do, but if it did, it would be even worse than 4.58. Is what I'm trying to say, and yeah, it's. Don't go getting excited about Chad Kuhl or anything.
I always find it so interesting when a player, a hitter, pitcher, whatever it might be, has this dominant game, but is just a player we don't believe in whatsoever. We still bring them up early in the podcast because obviously we have to, but it just kind of reminds me of like when Reed Detmers threw that no-hitter and then, you know, we just kind of poo-pooed him the whole time and then we got yelled at for it. The good news is there's no Rockies fans. Well, there's no Rockies fans out there, so we won't get yelled at.
Well, I mean, where's
right Reed Detmers?
That's yeah, where's Reed Detmers now, baby?
Yeah. Chad Kuhl, I was surprised to see still 40% rostered. Scott, we were talking beforehand. You made a good point that he was dominant early on. So I think people might have just added him and held on. But
he is a SPARP, I believe. So this is a 2-start week for a SPARP. So, you know, I started him in one points league. I can't say it's like the smartest thing I've ever done. But,
yeah, know. two Coors Field starts, one against the Dodgers. I don't even know who the second one.
Diamondbacks,
yeah. But still, Coors Field. Like,
yeah.
No, I'm glad it worked
in a roto
out.
League. Don't think he has any value in a roto league.
Fortune favors the brave for one, Chris Towers, who rolled out Chad Kuhl 2 starts in Coors Field. I will also point out, I think this might have been a little circumstantial. The Dodgers played a long Sunday night game, then they were in Atlanta. They had to travel to Colorado, play the very next day. It's a lot going on there. So we love you, Chad Cool, but not enough to recommend adding you in fantasy baseball. Oh, my goodness gracious, for me, Pablo Lopez, and this will kind of lead us into a discussion about more pitchers regressing. I don't know if this has happened to you guys, but I have roto leagues that have completely flipped where the first month of the season, I had like no hitting points. Now, my hitting is great and my pitching has gone down the drain. And part of the reason might be Pablo Lopez. So let's take a look at what is going on with
him. You know, I do have a league like that.
Yep.
And I have Pablo Lopez on it.
Well, let's talk about it.
Curiously enough.
A recent run of mediocrity this time at the Cardinals where he gives up 5 runs over 5 innings pitched. He did have 13 swinging strikes. Good amount of hard contact against him. Average exit velocity up over 94 miles per hour in the start. And over his last 8 starts, Pablo Lopez, a 4.89 ERA, just under a strikeout per inning. The walks and the home runs have gone up. Obviously, that's going to lead to a bunch of issues. The overall ERA is still very good, 2.98. But Chris, if we kind of, you know, break the season down into segments so far, it's been, you know, the first 6-7 starts were great for Lopez, but the last 8 have not been. What do you think about Pablo Lopez here?
Yeah, there have been ups and downs within that 8. And if you go, you know, one start further back, you end up with a 7 innings, 1 earned run, 11 strikeout start. So, you know, we're kind of dealing with arbitrary endpoints here. I think in this case, the overall record is, you know, high 2s, low 3s ERA, xERA, all the peripheral stats mostly suggest that he's a low 3s ERA. And I think that's what he is. So it's not really for me a question of is Pablo Lopez useful or is he good? I think he is good. He's not one of the 7 best pitchers in baseball or like whatever he looked like early on in the season. He was never going to continue to be that, but I still think most of the ERA estimators suggest that Pablo Lopez remains quite good, and the strikeout rate has gone down a little bit, you know, in the last 8 starts, but
yeah,
still good enough for a guy who does a pretty good job of suppressing quality of contact, and I think he'll continue to be pretty good. But
yeah,
you missed your sell high opportunity.
The swinging strike rate during this 8 start stretch has been about 14%, which is still a top 10 yep. among qualifiers kind of swinging strike rate. So mm-hmm. I don't think, you know, it's not like Pablo Lopez was faking it earlier. His stuff is legitimately high end. And yeah, it's been a little, let's see. So what is this? So in the 7 starts leading up to this start, which was, you know, a run per inning, obviously, in this start. It was a 4.31 ERA in the previous 7. So it was shaky, but it's not like he was getting crushed. And as you mentioned, Frank, his ERA even now is only 2.98. So, yeah, I think if anything, you could possibly make a buy-low argument for Pablo Lopez. Just, you know, if somebody's looking at the raw numbers, they still look great. But maybe the experience of having him recently, the person who has Lopez will have soured on him. Something to look into.
Even during this stretch, it's really only 2 bad starts. It's the one where he gave up 6 earned and 5 1/3, and then this one 5 and 5. Other than that, he has 1 start with 4 earned runs in 7 innings, another start with 4 earned runs in 7 innings. That's not a good start, but like you'll live with that. Not every time out. That would be a, you know, 5-ish ERA, but you can live with those kind of starts. That's not too concerning. So I don't know. He's been prone throughout his career to these blow-up starts or stretches that kind of wreck his overall line, and I think that's The bigger concern for me with Pablo Lopez is actually just the shoulder. You know, the fact that he's had multiple shoulder injuries in multiple seasons, that's the bigger concern. I think he's going to be good when he's healthy. But, you know, I think you can still make a case that potentially you sell high on Pablo Lopez just because the injury risk does linger, or loom, I guess would be the better word.
All right. So you ask Chris, he'll tell you to continue to look to sell high. And Scotty says to buy low.
Well, if you can.
If you can.
If you can. I think he's a, I would rank him as a top 20 starter.
Yes.
Rest of season. So if you can, I don't know what a good comp is, but if you could give up, who's somebody who's been kind of hot recently? I don't know. I'm choking. Sorry.
Logan Gilbert.
Sure. If you can give up, I would.
Or Zach Gallen.
Definitely Gallen.
Yeah. Gallen's,
if you can give up Gallen for Pablo Lopez, I would do that.
What about Gonsolin for Lopez?
That's good.
That'd be hard to do.
Yeah.
Would I do it? I think because of the injury risk, I wouldn't do it. Lopez's injury risk.
It just doesn't really feel like it makes sense to do, you know?
I don't like doing trades where I feel like it's basically a lateral move, and that's what I feel like that would be.
Yep, fair enough. All right, Pablo Lopez there. A few other pitchers who have been regressing as of late. Jordan Montgomery up against the Oakland A's. Come on, the Oakland A's, great matchup. He gave up 5 runs over 6 2/3 innings, 6 strikeouts. He settled down. It was all right. 15 swinging strikes in this start. The ERA is now 3.27. It seems very obvious to me that the Yankees are consciously having Jordan Montgomery and Jameson Taillon pitch to contact this season. They're really not walking anybody. I think that they're just trying to fill up the strike zone. And for the most part, it has worked. But obviously, you pitch in the strike zone, things are going to happen eventually. And we've seen that with Montgomery and Jameson Taillon recently. Martin Perez, don't doubt yourself too much, Chris. Another blast start. His second in his last 4 outings. He gave up 4 runs over 6 innings pitched, 6 strikeouts. It's okay. Tyler Anderson has now allowed exactly 4 runs in 3 of his last 4 starts. He was at the Rockies where he gave up 4 runs over 6 innings with 10 hits allowed in this one. Chris, do you actually have any concerns with Tyler Anderson, Martin Perez, Jordan Montgomery?
I think Anderson, you can give him the Coors Field benefit of the doubt. And then I just don't think Perez or Montgomery are all that good. So I it doesn't change how I think about them, but that's because I don't think particularly highly of them. So I think both of them are still Sal High candidates.
All right. Any different thoughts here, Scott?
Well, it looked like Perez was getting crushed at first. So it was pretty solid bounce back for him, almost getting a quality start out of it, just a run high on that. So that was, you know, if you had him in your lineup for the 2 starts that could still turn out favorably for you. Yeah, Anderson is the one that I think... Yeah, it was Coors Field, and you could maybe give him a pass for that, but it's been a while now since he was racking up strikeouts. His past 6 starts, Tyler Anderson, is only 6.6 K per 9. The swinging strike rate is respectable, but it wasn't prior to tonight. He had a pretty good swinging strike game. Actually, he didn't. Okay, so I probably calculated wrong. I think the swinging strike rate is only around 10% during that 6-start stretch, too. I was trying to calculate it with this. Today he had 10 swinging strikes on 96 pitches. That's not a great rate. So probably about 10% swinging strike rate over that 6-start stretch. Not what you'd expect. Not what you'd call a strikeout pitcher, either of those numbers. And we were kind of hanging... The breakout case for Tyler Anderson really depended on that, about him establishing this swing and miss changeup and throwing it more. And he may be going the way of Eric Lauer here, where he was able to sustain that for half a dozen starts. But in the end, the track record is catching up to him here. I'm not ready to say that for sure for Tyler Anderson. The Dodgers have a really good track record of maximizing pitchers' output, their potential. Maybe this is the blip for Tyler Anderson, but the track record would suggest that the earlier run of success was.
All right. I think for him, it's just he might have a really, really thin margin for error. Like, if he doesn't have the feel for the changeup, things could get ugly quickly.
Yeah, he had to throw his fastball more in this start. It just seems like he really didn't have that changeup or cutter going, and his 4-seam fastball is a bad pitch. That is Tyler Anderson, mm-hmm, we're talking about. So someone, again, you like the others, you just kind of quietly shop him around, see what you can get for Tyler Anderson. Again, sell high. High is the key word there for him. Before we hit the break, just a reminder, if you listen to us on Spotify, help us out. Give us a 5-star rating there. In fact, if you listen to us on Apple, you can help us out there too. You can drop a question, a team name in the Apple Podcast review, and we will read it on an upcoming episode. We do have Team Name Tuesday coming up a little bit later on, and we'll take a break. Be back right after this. If you've ever been in the market for a new home, you know home shopping can be a lot. There's so much you don't know and so much you need to know. What are the neighborhoods like? What are the schools like? Who is the agent who knows the listing or neighborhood best? And why can't all this information just be in one place? Well, now it is on Homes.com. As somebody who's been through this, I can tell you these features are so, so incredibly valuable. They've got comprehensive neighborhood guides and detailed reports about local schools, and their agent directory helps you see the agent's current listings and sales history. The area you live in is just as important as the house itself. You can get to know a neighborhood without ever setting foot in it. Say you're a really active person. You could find out about the nearest parks. Do they have a baseball field? Maybe you want to join a softball league like Chris and I play in. Also, Homes.com collaboration tools makes it easier than ever to share all this information with your family. It's a whole cul-de-sac of home shopping information all at your fingertips. Homes.com, we've done your homework. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. The news and notes. Bryce Harper is expected to undergo surgery to repair his fractured left thumb, but he plans to return this season, which what would that bring him to? Mid-August, something like that? It's rough.
Yeah, I saw back by the end of August.
Ugh.
So there's not going to be much time left. I mean, any 6+ week injury at this point in the season, you know, you're
probably the rest of the regular season in a points league.
Yeah, right. Like if you're not going to be in the playoffs, you might not get anything from that player anymore. And of course, any one setback could make it officially a season ender. It's amazing that we're already halfway through the season. And we're saying that about these players, isn't it?
Yeah.
Or is that just me?
No. It took me by surprise as well.
We're not technically there yet, but we're close.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the end of June, technically, right? Like
this
first
is, this
3 months.
This is kind of like our friend Heath Cummings arguing that 30 is middle-aged. You know, we're at the midpoint of the season because we're in the middle third of the season. You know?
No, we're at the... The season is 6 months long, and we're at the end of the third month.
Yeah, I would say. I mean, look, it started the first week into April, so I guess it technically wouldn't be until the first week of July. But yeah, sure. I typically look at the end of June as like the midpoint of the baseball season. Speaking of being 30, Chris, I saw your tweet about getting old and struggling with softball recuperation.
Man, played in Frank's softball games on Sunday, two games. Embarrassed myself, misplaying the first batted ball hit to me out in right field. It was really real bad. Then I had softball today, and boy, I feel like I'm going to die.
Yeah, that's basically me every Monday of my life.
So. My elbow hurts so much between like flag football on Wednesday, softball yesterday, and then today. I just like my elbow feels like it's going to fall off.
You raise a good point, though, Chris. What is middle age these days?
Because I described you're gonna have to talk to Heath about this. Heath is adamant that like 27 is middle aged because the average lifespan is like 78, and so if you break the average lifespan into thirds, everything that falls in the middle third is middle aged. It is a bonkers theory, and so I just wanted to throw it out there.
A couple years ago, I described myself to a doctor as entering middle age, and he rejected that notion. And I was like, well, you know, I'm 38 now, so I was probably like 36, 35 at the time. And I was
I can't define it, but I know it when I see it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, my hair is turning gray, as you know.
I've got like 4 or 5 white mustache hairs now.
I feel much older than I actually am, but
yeah, you're a baby.
People don't care about that. Jack Flaherty was placed back on the IL with a right shoulder strain, as we unfortunately suspected. His teammate Harrison Bader also went to the IL due to plantar fasciitis. Dylan Carlson started in center field with Lars Nootbaar in right field. Apparently Nootbaar can start against right-handed pitching moving forward. Chris Sale will throw 3 innings in a rehab start at AA on Thursday. Looks like Sale is being prepped for a post-All-Star break return to the Red Sox. Suspensions have been handed out for Sunday's brawl between the Mariners and Angels. Angels Mariner manager Phil Nevin suspended 10 games.
Rightfully so.
What did he actually do in the middle
of
everything?
It sounds like he started, I can't remember the relief pitcher's name, but it sounded like he started him with the explicit intention of having him throw at the Mariners batters.
No. Oh. All right. Jesse Winker got 7 games. Sounds like he's going to appeal, but could miss a big portion of this week if you started him, unfortunately.
I mean, that's like 8% of the rest of the season, depending on how long he pushes it. If it goes another couple weeks, you're talking almost 10% of the rest of the season.
Yep. J.P. Crawford got 5 games. Julio Rodriguez and Raisel Iglesias each got 2 games. Gleyber Torres was out of the lineup on Monday after receiving a cortisone shot in his wrist. He'll miss at least 1 more game as a result. Aroldis Chapman will make his final rehab appearance at AAA on Tuesday. And they continue to say that Clay Holmes will operate as their highest leverage reliever, which could be the 8th or 9th innings.
I did see a quote from Aaron Boone today that may challenge that idea. Now, it was, I don't have the full context for this quote. It was tweeted by Laura Albanese. Maybe how to pronounce that name, a sports writer for Newsday. Clay has certainly earned that closer role, is what Boone said. In the beginning, the tweet goes on, they plan to give Chapman a few appearances to get in a good spot delivery-wise, and then another quote that'll give the Yankees it'll give the Yankees a second back-end monster. So, I don't know. Based on that tweet and what she decided to exclude from the quote, it seems to me like they might at least be on equal footing, Chapman and Clay Holmes. I did a horrible job of describing it. I'm sorry. I thought it was a worthy tweet to bring up.
No, definitely. I don't know. We'll see where it goes from here. Clay Holmes has arguably, been the best reliever in baseball this season. I don't see why they would take him out of the ninth, but alas, politics.
They got one of the best closers in history.
Yeah.
Still on their roster. That would be why, but I mean, Clay Holmes looks like one of the arguably the best closer in baseball right now. So that's going to be a tough call for Aaron Boone.
As expected, both Jarren Duran and Tanner Houck were placed on the restricted list while in Toronto. Mitch Haniger remains on track for a return sometime around the All-Star break. He's been out since late April due to a high ankle sprain. Trevor Larnach is expected to miss 6 weeks after undergoing core muscle surgery on Monday. Brian Anderson was reinstated by the Marlins, and it will be interesting to see how they divvy up playing time between him and John Birdie, the rest of the team. They have a few names and players that they can move around. I know that Jazz Chisholm is dealing with some back spasms, so that allowed both Brian Anderson and John Birdie to be in the lineup on Monday. Tyler McGill was transferred to the 60-day IL, which means he will be out until mid-August at the earliest. Let's take a look at some offensive outbursts here on Monday. The Twins put up 11 runs on 14 hits. Carlos Correa hit his 8th home run, and he's having a monster June. 343 batting average, 5 home runs in the month. Gary Sanchez went 3 for 5 with his 9th homer. Gio Urshela went 3 for 5 with 2 doubles, 2 RBI. Last but not least, Alex Kirilloff breakout week starts with 3 hits and 2 runs scored. Let's see if he can build off of that. Who did they score all of these runs off of? Tristan McKenzie. You want to talk about regression? He has now allowed 13 runs over his last 2 starts, which includes 5 home runs. He did have 7 strikeouts in this start, 15 swinging strikes. You like to see both of those things, but man, as much hard contact and fly balls as he allows, I mean, I guess we should have seen this regression coming, but Chris, this was a pretty rough start to the week if you use McKenzie as a 2-star pitcher.
Yeah, I think he needs to go the way we saw Josiah Gray pitch on Sunday, where it was just really heavy slider and curveball usage. I think they're kind of the Spider-Man meme, except McKenzie throws his fastball 60% of the time. He probably needs to fix that moving forward.
Yes, I would agree. Scott, would you look to buy low on Tristan McKenzie after these recent 2 starts? They were both against the Twins, so I mean, it could just be the Twins own him or something.
No, I think Tristan McKenzie has flaws that he will have to overcome to be a reliable pitcher in fantasy. I think he's a useful one as it is. You know, these last 2 starts haven't changed my opinion, but vulnerable to home runs, just like Josiah Gray. I mean, Chris makes a good comparison there, I think, where there's you definitely see the potential for more from both of those pitchers, and maybe Josiah Gray is figuring out how to get the most out of what he offers quicker than McKenzie is. But for now, I see them both as pretty risky and vulnerable to blowups, just like this.
All right. On the other side, Sonny Gray turns in his first quality start since returning from the IL. At the Guardians, 7 shutout innings with 3 strikeouts, only had 5 swinging strikes. He did lean into the sinker in this start, so that probably explains the lack of swinging strikes. ERA is down to 2.17. Scott, do you think that we just kind of undervalue, I guess, disrespect Sonny Gray? Because, I mean, whenever he's pitched, he's been pretty good. It's been ups, downs, 1 year, this year, that. But overall for his career, 3.57 ERA, it's, you know, solid for Sonny Gray.
Sonny Gray is the bane of my existence as a fantasy baseball analyst, so I don't feel confident assessing our assessment of Sonny Gray as you just asked me to do.
You're always either too high or too low on him.
Yes, yes. I think it's interesting that he has sort of faded his best swing and miss pitch. He only threw 5 sliders in this one. And that's historically been when he's been a strikeout pitcher, which hasn't been very consistent in being a good source of strikeouts. But when he has been one, it's usually because he's leaned on that slider more. And he's been throwing it less and less over the course of this season, and nonetheless has a 2.17 ERA and 0.97 whip. So I don't know what I'm supposed to make of that. I think Sonny Gray is pretty firmly in the mid-tier pitcher camp and not somebody that we should consider must start, but deserves to be rostered widely like he is.
All right, let's move over to another amazing offense. The Orioles, really? They mashed 5 home runs at the Mariners. Anthony Santander hit his 14th. Ryan Mountcastle hit his 13th. Austin Hayes hit his 11th. Jorge Mateo hit his 6th home run. And Adley Rutschman, 2 more hits for him, including his 3rd home run of the season. And he is having a solid June as well. 271 batting average, 10 doubles, 3 homers, 91.6 mile per hour average exit velocity for Adley Rutschman. You know, this is how things used to be. We've talked about it a lot. Prospects come up, they struggle, you know, start to gain a little bit more confidence, and then they get going. And that looks like the case for Adley Rutschman. Who did they do all this damage against? George Kirby got crushed. He gave up 7 runs over 4 innings pitched, including 4 home runs allowed. The ERA is now up to 4.08. And Chris, admittedly, I just kind of struggle to figure out George Kirby, which is fine. I mean, he's, you know, a 24-year-old rookie pitcher. You know, I'm not going to judge him too harshly, but his best skill right now is control. He doesn't walk anybody. He has 7 walks in 10 starts, but outside of that, he just doesn't really have another standout skill so far. What do you think?
Yeah, doesn't really have a standout pitch either, except for the, you know, maybe the fastball. I think he's probably someone who would benefit from throwing outside of the strike zone a little more and trying to get more chases. Because his whiff rate on all of his secondary pitches is really low. His best whiff rate on any of his pitches is fastball at 27%. Slider's 21, changeup's 21. His curveball has a 9% whiff rate. That would be incredibly low for a fastball. That would be incredibly low for a sinker, let alone a curveball. So, yeah, I think he's still... he probably pitches in the zone too much, and he's going to have to rely on getting a lot of weak contact. And I don't know if, you know, we can say for sure he has that skill yet. So I think he's probably a somewhat limited pitcher right now.
All right. So George Kirby, use him in the right matchups. Look, two-star week. I started him in a few different leagues. It sucks.
This is what makes fantasy the right matchup.
This is what makes fantasy baseball so frustrating, because you have George Kirby against the Orioles in Seattle, and then you have Chad Kuhl against the Dodgers in Colorado. Turns out Chad Kuhl was the right one to start.
Yeah. So frustrating. On the other side, Tyler Wells was starting for the Orioles and has allowed 3 earned runs or fewer in every start but one. It's a little misleading because he doesn't go that deep into his starts, but he was solid here. 5 innings, 1 hit, 1 run, 3 strikeouts allowed, lowers the ERA to 3.23. Underlying numbers not very good for Tyler Wells. 41% rostered. Scott, what do you think of him? He has SPARP eligibility for those in points leagues.
I don't think much of him. He's generally not a bat misser, and he has an extreme fly ball rate. So you can see it happens sometimes that extreme fly ball pitchers like this have stretches where they're able to sustain a really low ERA just because not enough of those fly balls are clearing the fence to inflate the ERA the way fly ball pitchers are vulnerable to, the way we've seen Tristan McKenzie do in his past couple starts. And it usually catches up to the pitcher. Occasionally, you'll find an extreme fly ball pitcher like Christian Javier, for instance, who the fly balls just don't get hit that hard. They manifest as a lot more infield flies than the sort of fly balls that are going to threaten to carry over the fence. But I'm not ready to say Tyler Wells is one of those exceptions.
That's what Wells has done this season. He's getting a ton of infield fly balls, 13% rate. He's got a 29% fly ball rate, only a 20% line drive rate. So, like, if he was to be successful, this would be the way to do it. But, like, Christian Javier also has a strikeout rate that's nearly double Tyler Wells. So, like, yeah, that's really where I think Tyler Wells falls way short. It's just, unless he's going to be, you know, one of the 5 or so best pitchers in baseball in terms of quality of contact suppression, it's probably going to go south for him pretty quickly.
Yeah, and he's actually done a solid job in terms of limiting hard contact, Tyler Wells, but not at an elite level or anything. So need to see more. I picked him up in one of our, I think, a podcast points league and started him just because I was desperate for a reliever. So
yeah, it's a SPARP.
The danger in that is that for this profile of pitcher, if it is going to go wrong, and we think it's going to go wrong, it's likely to go very, very wrong. So yeah. I would just steer clear of Wells personally.
I'll tell you what, Scott, if there's ever a year to be a fly ball pitcher in Camden Yards, I think it's probably this one, given their changes to dimensions. Other pitching leftovers from Monday. Kevin Gausman tied a season high with 10 strikeouts against the Red Sox. He went 7 shutout, added 18 swinging strikes. Adam Wainwright gets back on track after 2 subpar outings. He was up against the Marlins, went 7 shutout with 9 strikeouts. And Lucas Giolito tosses his first quality start since June 5th, this one at the Angels. 6 innings of 2-run ball with 6 strikeouts, 14 swinging strikes. Still gave up some hard contact. I'm not sure that he's fixed, but, you know,
It was a strong recovery, though, because right, I think he had all 6 of those hits allowed through 3 innings, and I'm like, oh, man, Lucas Giolito's getting knocked around again. And then he recovered to have a really nice-looking line against the Angels. You know, 3 innings were, if not perfect, close to it to finish out the day.
Yeah, it's pretty rough when you've got Gavin Sheets in the outfield, too. I saw he was trying to catch a ball that Brandon Marsh hit, and it hit off of his glove, and it went over the fence. They originally called it a home run, and then it was ruled a triple after review, but doesn't help with those kind of outfielders out there. I'll tell you that for sure. Chris, anything you'd like to add on Giolito, Wainwright, Kevin Gausman from Monday?
I think Gausman's perfectly fine. I never dropped him outside of my top five starting pitchers once I moved him in there, despite his relative struggles. And I think he may have found the answer. There was a belief among the Blue Jays that he was tipping his pitches. And I don't know if you guys watched this start. He's using like a softball mitt. And it's kind of hilarious. He's got this like giant glove now that he's using. He said he can barely field with it, but it's helping him hide the ball better. So, hey, whatever works.
Interesting.
I'm not joking. It sounds like I'm joking.
But I'm not.
It's like a 14-inch mitt.
I started writing in Gausman on Twitter, and it just went to Gausman glove. It just like auto filled out. So I guess everyone's looking up Kevin Gausman's glove right now.
Like that Mickey Hatcher glove in the famous baseball card?
Yeah. Like that thing. Yeah. I actually do know what you're talking about.
I was surprised to see that his whip was 1.24 despite, you know, having a very good season for Gausman. I mean, his BABIP is 366. It's, you know, much higher than his career mark. So I would imagine there is some regression coming in the BABIP department for Kevin Gausman, and hopefully better whip moving forward for him.
Ironically, I'm watching the game right now, and he just had a ball hit right back to him with his giant glove. He fielded it perfectly fine. So he's perfectly fine now.
Hey, that'll help the BABIP. Let's do it. Anything with these two? Scott, I know Eric Fetty, we recommended him as a two-star pitcher. He was fine. 5 innings, 2 runs, 4 strikeouts. The other one is Connor Siebold. He started for the Red Sox. He got hit hard. He gave up 7 runs over 4 2/3. He had 21 swinging strikes, and he's actually had a pretty good minor league career. He's 26 years old, 3% rostered. What do you think? Anything with Fetty and Connor Siebold?
Yeah, Fetty was just totally a matchup thing to favorable ones in a week where there weren't many two-star pitchers to choose from. Mm-hmm. So the needle doesn't really move with this start. Fortunately, he didn't ruin you if you did follow through with that. Siebold is, I got to be honest, I saw the line and I didn't bother to look into it further because it was such a bad performance. But yeah, AAA this year, 209 ERA, 0.99 whip, right at a strikeout per inning. I'm going to have to look into him more. He's 26 years old, so that's kind of a red flag.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's on the older side.
I'll need to look into it more.
He is the 14th ranked prospect in the Red Sox organization, according to MLB.com. So I don't know. Just pay attention. Throw him on the scout team. Connor Siebold, the name there. Let's see where it goes from here. A few waiver wire decisions for hitters. I think I know the answer to this one. But Chris, Gavin Lux or Luis Garcia? I'll point out, in the month of June, Gavin Lux is hitting .347. He's got 1 homer, 6 doubles, 2 steals. What do you think about those two?
I like both of them. There's a lot that Gavin Lux is doing right. His quality of contact has been pretty good in the month of June. His zone contact rate is really high. I think it's like 85% or something. He's starting to look like what the version of Gavin Lux who would be good would have looked like. I think if I was going to add one of them, it would probably be Garcia. But I don't know. People have been so slow to pick up Garcia despite the fact that he's hitting like .330. That I don't know, maybe there's a better chance that Lux gets picked up and the opportunity cost tips that way. But I do think I like Luis Garcia better.
I definitely like Garcia better. I'm kind of over Lux. Like he'll go on these stretches where he hits for average, but not much else. And yeah, I don't know. I just don't see much there. I see a lot more there for Garcia, and I'd go with him.
All right. If you need either position, corner infielder or outfielder, they both play both. Garrett Cooper went 3-for-3. He's now batting .386 with 2 home runs, a .952 OPS in June. And Connor, 2 hits? Connor Joe goes 2-for-4 once again, now has multiple hits in 4 of his last 5 games. Scott, I know you recommended Connor Joe as a sleeper this week and Garrett Cooper last week, but if you're just kind of projecting rest of season, who do you like more, Garrett Cooper, Connor Joe?
I think I like Cooper more. I could see going with Joe over him in a points league where you don't like Cooper's probably going to hit for a better batting average. Joe might reach base at a higher rate. So it's, and I don't think either one of them has significant power. So it's a close call, but I'd probably say Cooper and Roto, Joe and points.
All right, some hitting leftovers. O'Neill Cruz hit his first home run of the season, a laser at
this
1-0.
A ridiculous, ridiculous home run. I don't know if you guys saw it, but it's like...
The hang time was, I think they said 4 seconds or something.
It's like off the outside corner, like high and outside, and he pulls it to the right side. And this thing must not have gotten more than about 30 feet off the ground at any point. It looks like a double to the gap that just keeps going. He's ridiculous.
Yeah. 109.8 miles per hour off the bat there for O'Neill Cruz. And look, I don't want to poo-poo the Pirates broadcasters or their fans. You should be excited about O'Neill Cruz, but they call this home run like they just won the World Series. It's interesting. I just want to see everything O'Neill Cruz does just for how they call it on the Pirates broadcast because it's pretty entertaining right now. Anthony Rizzo hit his 20th home run. Giancarlo Stanton hit his 18th. The Blue Jays, they hit a couple of dingers themselves. Vlad Jr. hit his 18th. George Springer hit his 14th. And Matt Chapman hit his 11th. What do you know? John Birdie, he hit a single. And what did he do? He stole a base. He's now up to 22 steals on the season. Paul Goldschmidt went 4-for-4 with his 19th homer. He's batting .347. There could be someone that I'm just completely missing right now. But is Paul Goldschmidt the favorite for National League MVP?
I don't really think about those things.
Me neither.
Oh, Machado.
I mean, Goldschmidt's having a better season than Machado. Like a definitive.
Machado's like half a win clear of him, but I guess it's a lot defense. Yeah. Goldschmidt does lead the Fangraphs offensive value metric by a significant margin among all players right now.
I mean, the Padres have been a very good story, so I get it with Machado, but Goldschmidt has just been ridiculous. Mitch Garver went 2-for-4, hit his 8th home run. Good to see as he battles through that forearm injury. And Whit Merrifield went 2-for-5 with his 11th steal. He now has 4 steals over his last 10 games, which helps when you consider he's batting .233. So, not great.
So it took me a bit longer to look up, but according to Baseball Reference WAR, which is calculated differently from Fangraphs WAR, Goldschmidt actually is ahead of Machado. However, there is an NL hitter tied with Goldschmidt who isn't Machado. Any guesses who that might be?
Harper?
I'll give you one each because you're never going to get it.
Now I want to think of a completely obscure player. I don't have anything good. Who is it?
Tommy Edman.
Ah, his teammate.
Which is it's mostly defense as well. But
yeah. He's not. He's 10th overall in Fangraphs WAR. I guess he's like 4th. Dansby Swanson's actually tied with Paul Goldschmidt in Fangraphs WAR.
Dansby Swanson, man. That guy's going to get paid, hopefully. I'm rooting for you. Get your money, kid. Call to the bullpen. The Nationals. Kyle Finnegan picked up his first save. Tanner Rainey had pitched 3 of the Nationals' previous 5 games, so Kyle Finnegan gets it there. And then for the Angels, Raisel Iglesias pitched a clean 9th for his 14th save. To stream or not to stream, we'll start with Tuesday. Zach Plesac versus the Twins, Jose Quintana at the Nationals, Ross Stripling versus the Red Sox, Michael Wacha at the Blue Jays, Dakota Hudson versus the Marlins, John Gray at the Royals, Johnny Cueto at the Angels, and Dean Kramer at the Mariners.
John Gray, going to keep saying it. You want to start him against the Royals. And otherwise, Dakota Hudson against the Marlins, I'm okay with.
All right. On Wednesday, we've got Mitch Keller at the Nationals, Dane Dunning at the Royals, Zach Greinke versus the Rangers, Chris Flexen versus the Orioles. Anybody else? Dylan Bundy at the Guardians. That's fun. Andre Pallante versus the Marlins, and Justin Steele versus the Reds is okay.
Dane Dunning at the Royals.
I'm not buying Mitch Keller, like, you know, being good, but I'm fine with it against the Nationals.
Yeah. He's been okay. He's kind of turned into, I don't know. Mitch Keller normally is, you know, he gets rocked or he's awesome, and now he's just kind of been mediocre all the time. So it's, I don't know.
Yeah, I saw this stat that was like no pitcher had thrown more than six sliders with more than 20 inches of horizontal break at higher than 85 miles per hour all season. And Mitch Keller did six of it, did that six times in his start on Friday. And it's like, all I could think was, man, it's fitting that that happened in a start where he gave up three runs in five innings.
Yeah, it's just...
Like, that sounds about right.
Yeah, it's Mitch Keller.
But maybe he'll give up two runs in five innings tomorrow.
All right. Wednesday. Team name Tuesday, 58 minutes. Take that, Chris. This one's from Big Daddy Lowry on Twitter. Captain Kirk and the Enterprise.
Okay.
He sent a screenshot of... Alejandro Kirk doing the Star Trek thing as well.
I didn't see that the other day.
Yeah, that was awesome. Emails. This one's from John. Well, these couple are from John. Daddy Schwarbucks.
Yep.
Kakunya Jr. For my Pokemon fans out there. Kirilov to see the wizard.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
From Mark. If you're having Gurio problems, I feel bad for Ryu, son.
Yep.
Is that a yup? That sounds like Heath came up with it.
I like that. From Thomas, for Frank's Star Wars education, let the Mookie win.
Yep.
From Dylan, morel of the story.
Yep.
And from Willie Kamish on Apple Podcast Reviews, Billy Bean is not my lover. I thought it was pretty good. All right, we're gonna wrap there. For Scott and Chris, I am Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll be back again tomorrow. Bye bye.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.